They sent Charles Ogletree, who had been the professor of Barack and Michelle when they were at the Harvard Law School. They sent other people after me to try to get me to tone down. And when none of that worked, apparently, they played their ace card. They had my mother, Maya Angelou, call me. And we had a serious conversation about Barack Obama. And she expressed her point of view, and I said to her, this is my calling. When I met you and we hung out 28 years ago in Africa, this is what you were trying to help me figure out, what my place was in the world. I've done this consistently, and I know that you appreciate the fact that this is what I do. I don't disrespect Barack Obama. I intend to vote for him just like you're going to vote for him. But that doesn't mean that I have to, that I should abrogate my responsibility to hold him accountable. She understood it, and that conversation ended, as did every conversation, because there are a number of things in the book you read that we had debates about Barack Obama, about the N-word. One of the worst mistakes that I think she ever made, and I love her, was writing that op-ed, Amy, in the New York Times to support Clarence Thomas when he was nominated. We disagreed about that. We had a long-running debate, lovingly, about what we thought was the greatest of all the virtues. She asked me one day, what do you think the greatest of all the virtues is? I said, for me, it'd have to be love. She said, no, I think it's courage. And for 28 years, we had a debate about which is the greatest of those virtues, love or courage. We never settled that. Even after she died last year, there's still no winner, no definitive answer to that debate. But my point is that every difference that we had, Amy, always ended on a love note. She never allowed any conversation, no matter how tense or terse, to end on anything but a love note, and our friendship always remained intact.
Well, Tavis Smiley, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Tavis Smiley, journalist, public TV and radio broadcaster. His new book is called My Journey with Maya. He's speaking today at the New York Public Library at noon, then at Union Square, Barnes & Noble at 7:30. This is Democracy Now! If you'd like to get a copy, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Caron, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Anna Osberg, Sam Riddell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, David Prude, Vesta Godars, and to our camera crew, John Randolph and Kieran Krug-Meadows and Jose Miranda. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present a music documentary that raises the bar for the genre. Arrows into Infinity, the new documentary about the life of jazz musician Charles Lloyd, Thursday, April 9 at the Clinton Street Theater. Arrows into Infinity takes us on Lloyd's journey from the heights of jazz rock royalty to his life in seclusion and back again. Arrows into Infinity, the Portland premiere, Thursday, April 9, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We're at the Erez Crossing, which is where you enter Gaza from. So apparently, when you go into Gaza, you have to walk until you get to the first town there. And apparently that walk is very dangerous.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom. Thursday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University's Smith Center, room 338. Guest speaker will be Stephen Saleta, former Virginia Tech professor. That's Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom. Sponsored by Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights. On Thursday, April 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University, Smith Center, room 338. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is proud to present a live broadcast of the Inner City Blues Festival, a benefit for Healthcare for All Oregon from the North Portland Eagles Lodge 7611 North Exeter at North Lombard in Portland. Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight, hear live performances from such local blues and R&B luminaries as LaRonda Steele, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. Again, that's the Inner City Blues Festival live broadcast and show on Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Paul Roland, and I apologize to all of you Chumbawamba fans who were severely disappointed when that record came out, but I hope you've grown to like it like I have. So yeah, I play that song, you know, just to, when we have moments like last evening here in Portland with the Portland Planning Commission, despite seemingly a fairly overwhelming opposition amongst the public, which of course doesn't seem to matter all that much when such decisions are being made, did approve a zoning change for the Pembina propane terminal at Portland's Terminal 6, the Port of Portland's Terminal 6 up in North Portland. We've been following that here on KBOO. And we're going to keep following it this morning because it's not over. It's going to go to the city council next. We're not sure when. So anybody out there who was at the hearing and would like to contribute your take on what went down there and what the next steps are, feel free to call in. Number is 503-231-8187. And I do have a guest who is there as well and has also been following this issue and other similar issues, Dave King. Welcome,
hi.
Dave. So Dave, a longtime activist here in Portland, currently with Jobs with Justice and the Climate Jobs Committee. I asked you, you know, I actually had a guest planned from several days ago. I think his name is Dave Lowy. He's a Native Canadian man who was an ex-Pembina employee who was going to share a lot of details about the nature of Pembina's activities up in Canada, because they're heavily involved in tar sands. They're a pipeline company. And yes, they are a Canadian company that is looking to get inroads here into Portland to ship propane, volatile propane gas on the Asian market down through Portland. So again, the number is 231-8187. So I wanted to have you on, Dave, for a number of reasons. One is, you know, in case they had miraculously gone against this project and we would be all happy and ready to go on to the next thing. And I was kind of wanting to talk about the whole issue of, you know, Obama's talked about, you know, the green economy. You know, there's a lot of discussions about, you know, trade-offs between the environment and jobs. That seems to be a huge issue. I mean, is it possible to actually have, you know, a exploitative capitalist economic system and protect the environment? These are all interesting questions. And I'm sure you have your interesting take. And I know you've helped start this climate jobs committee as a way to really start talking about that on a concrete level. You know, actually talk to people in the building trades, in the unions, in lots of different fields, and start the conversation about how to actually, you know, not continue to have this polarization between between workers and environmentalists, which, you know, is in my experience going back to the days of the forest wars here in Oregon, is a long-standing issue, and it rears its ugly head on any time there's a, you know, a KXL pipeline, or anytime there's a big capital investment project, huge, major infrastructure project or natural resource extraction. This issue keeps coming up, and it seems to confound us a lot of times, because a lot of people you would hope, expect, think might be working together don't end up working together because they have different interests. And we saw actually last night at the hearing, there's actually some unions were against this project and some unions were in favor of this project. So even within the union and workers, even within the realm of people who are trying to protect jobs, it's not always clear what the best course of action. In fact, I interviewed Mike Stanton, the head of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, a couple nights ago on the news, and he, you know, very clearly expressed the several points about this propane terminal, that the just the slowdown on the tracks, the additional train, the train traffic, and the preferential treatment given to these what he calls energy trains, the coal, oil, and gas trains, as opposed to other commodities, other products that are either going to be exported or moving through, that that actually some of those products actually are involved in greater job production than this than propane in this propane terminal. So a lot of stuff on the plate. Again, the Portland Planning Commission voted 6-4. You can go online and find out about it. After a six-hour emotion-filled meeting and two votes, this is from Morgan Live, the Portland Plan and Sustainability Commission narrowly approved a zoning change Tuesday night that would allow a controversial propane export terminal in North Portland. The commission's decision will now go to a vote of the Portland City Council, likely in a few weeks. Opponents are planning an active and public campaign to persuade city commissioners to deny it. Pembina Pipeline has proposed building a $500 million facility at the Port of Portland's Terminal 6 opposite West Hayden Island to export propane to Asia. The zoning change would allow the Canadian company to run a short pipeline over a narrow strip of land at the shoreline that is currently zoned for conservation. Without the change, the current zoning would prohibit Pembina's proposal. Commissioners heard 4 hours of public testimony last night, much of it focused on public safety and environmental risks from terminal operations, the rail transport of propane through Portland neighborhoods, and the tankers that would travel down the Columbia River. An initial motion to maintain the current zoning and prohibit the facility ended in a 5-5 deadlock, quite close. After adopting 8 amendments that dealt with everything from carbon emissions to insurance on the facility, Commissioner Teresa St. Martin changed her vote, and a motion to approve the zoning change passed by a vote 6-4. So, yes, I do encourage people who have been involved in this issue. I do have one guest I had asked to call in. Hopefully he will call in. He's an ex-engineer in the gas industry, and he had some very powerful testimony. He has experience at a plant in Texas that exploded several decades ago, and his knowledge of propane. And I'm sure some of the rest of you who are listening were there as well. Or if you're not, if you have any comments, questions, concerns, please give us a call. So once again, welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
After that lengthy introduction. So I know you've been to, I'm sure you've been to quite a few hearings in your time. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been a few.
Yeah. And they're generally pretty similar. Public gets to talk for a long, long time, and then they get to decide.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of times not the same day.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It was a long time. I cut out after a few hours myself, and you didn't stay till the end. But it was, you know, there was a couple hundred people there, overwhelmingly against this this project. And there's been, have you been actively involved in, you know, in some of the organizing around this?
No, no. Well, I don't actually do that. I might be disappointing you because what our committee does, what our committee's goal is to try to heal that jobs versus the environment divide. And so in order to stay in communication with, especially with the building trades unions, but also with the rest of labor, we're neutral on these kind of projects. Even though a lot of our members might have a, you know, an anti-position, but we're neutral. And I spoke, I was in the middle last night. What our strategy is to try to point out to labor and especially the building trades that if we all got serious about the climate, which is deserves to be serious about it, we would force our government and our whole society to change direction and fix it, and that would create millions and millions of jobs. It'd be like World War II. Everybody'd be working. They'd be hiring high school kids and people with mental illnesses to do all the stuff that needs to be done. There's huge projects that need to be done.
Indeed. And that is what I was actually, why I was interested in having you on, because I think that's a, you know, I've tried to step back in various ways and look at the big picture or sort of deeper dynamics than we maybe tend to look at when we're fighting these single battles. And so I think that's a crucial conversation to have. So I'm very glad to have you. So, you know, the issue of, did you hear my interview with Mike Stanton the other night?
No, I missed it.
He was basically laying out the reason why this facility actually doesn't create a lot of jobs.
Right.
You know, so that seems to be an important consideration. If, you know, obviously there's going to be money coming into the city. I think the man I was referring to, Bill Blake, I believe his name is the engineer. He held up a sign. I think it was him saying, you know, there'll be 2 cents per gallon of gas, I believe, that's going to be coming into the city. And is it worth the risks? So I don't actually have a firm grasp on the actual economics, how much money actually will be flowing into the city coffers. But, these are very, complex set of issues. So there's the money coming into the city. And then, again, as Mike Stanton was talking about, there's actual number of jobs creating, because that's an argument that's often made for these projects. But actually, it's a very, very, very heavily technologically intensive project, and there's not a massive, it's going to be coming in by train, it's going to be offloaded automatically into a storage tank, there's a lot of automation involved, so there's not actually a huge number of jobs created, as opposed to, who knows what that site could be used for. I mean, we don't have there is no central planning in this kind of economy, which I guess is one thing.
It's a problem in itself.
A fundamental problem. So yeah, let's get back and talk a little bit how you got into this work and how long this Climate Jobs Committee has been going on and who's involved in it.
What we did is we were just thinking about we read Bill McKibben's article in Rolling Stone, the terrifying new math of the climate, something like that. And my wife and I did, Lori. And then we came up with, I think she came up with the idea of having a, not a book club, but an article club. So we circulated a sign-up sheet at a Jobs with Justice Steering Committee meeting, which is that's something that everybody should know about. The Jobs with Justice Steering Committee is a meeting of usually around 50 people, all activists, all involved in all kinds of things all over town. If you want to know what's going on, Jobs and Justice Steering Committee is the place to go, and it's the first Monday of every month at 5:30. So, a little plug there. So anyhow, we passed around a sign-up sheet, and I think 16 people signed up and actually went. We had two different meetings, and 16 people signed up, read the article, and had a discussion. And the consensus in both get-togethers was, God, we got to do something about this. And of those 16, 12 formed a committee. And we discussed and debated and kicked around back and forth what we should do with that committee, and wound up with what I said, that we're going to address the need for jobs as a way to try to explain it's not jobs versus the environment. It's really all about, it's about doing the work. We've got to get the work done. And the way to do it is to educate people. A big part of it is to get past the corporate lock on the media and educate people about what's really going on with the climate, which is dire.
You know, I noticed, I couldn't help noticing, I think it was you who, you know, I belong to some of these Facebook groups, and one of them is a climate change discussion. I believe I saw you asked to be admitted to the group, I think it was.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's a scary group. So I wouldn't encourage necessarily people to get involved, because you've got, it's just this, talk about polarization.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. It's so bad that you wonder if there's any worth, if it's worthwhile getting involved, because there's just some extreme vitriol on both sides. If you really want to go to kind of the nub, you know, of like what this whole, you know, what the differences of opinion are out there on this issue, go to a climate change discussion group on Facebook. Check that out. And of course, there are a lot of interesting articles. It's just it's a challenge, you know, because you're going to be hit hard when you when you express yourself. So you got to have thick skin. Anyway, so that's so what is the actual work? What's the actual work of the committee? What actually do you all do?
Well, the first big project we did was, and it took a long time. It was a big, kind of a big hassle, was getting a solar installation on the roof of the Musicians Union Hall. The Musicians Union is kind of everybody's favorite hall. They're really generous with it. It's a great space. And
it's up on 20th and Sandy.
Yeah, just off of Sandy on 20th, just south of Sandy. And we got it under what's called the feed-in tariff program, which is what's made Germany the leader in solarizing and getting off of fossil fuels and nuclear. And the way it works is, it's really quite simple, is essentially it's simple, but the details are really complicated. When you put a solar array on your roof, the utility must buy the surplus, or no, must buy all that you generate and pay you for it. Pretty premium, pretty decent price. And then you go ahead and buy the electricity from the utility like normal. So in Germany, everybody's falling all over each other trying to get their roof solarized.
Because it actually pays.
Because it pays, yeah. You make some money off of it. Yeah, and actually people make pretty, you know, decent money. Farmers, and they don't limit the size that you can put on, so, you know, farmers that have a big roof and a big space can actually make decent money off of it.
So I wonder if the success of it in Germany has something to do with the fact that there aren't major German fossil fuel corporations.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Although there are, there's at least one coal company. There's coal companies.
Yeah.
But they obviously don't have the same kind of political, overwhelming political clout in Germany.
Yeah, I think they have a solider democracy in Germany. And utility prices are high. So, you know, that helps to pay for it.
That's generally true in Europe. Both gas and utility prices tend to be closer to, you know, the actual market
rate.
Right,
yeah. But it's definitely a viable thing here. And there's a pilot program that may or may not squeak through the legislature, but we got the musicians on that. So that was one project we did. And then we had a celebration of it. And actually, the 29th of this month, April 29th, we're going to have a movie night where we're going to show a couple of really good videos and then have a discussion of it. And these discussions... Okay, the other thing we're doing is what we call article clubs. That first thing that we did with Bill McKibben's article was quite successful. So we've started up another series of article clubs. We're working on the sixth one, and that is reading Naomi Klein's, the introduction to her new book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. It's an incredibly good article. Pretty much summarizes her book. Her book is really good, really incredibly well researched. I mean, it's a book, but it's also a source of lots of information, lots of footnotes. So that's the kind of stuff. And then we're, you know, like going around and talking to unions about what we're doing and trying to get them involved and get them to get their membership involved.
Well, I want to talk definitely a lot more about that as we go along, but I notice we already have two callers, at least one of which has been patiently waiting. Deanna, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning, and thank you. I think this is the best guest you could have this morning, Paul, because that seems to be exactly what is missing from the equation. I didn't know anyone was doing this kind of work. I'm thrilled to hear it. I think education is definitely the answer, because it's a false dichotomy. It's a false dichotomy, jobs against the environment.
That's
it's
right.
Ridiculous. And if people can come to understand that, that is the hope that we have. It seems to me that last night I was there for the whole knockdown drag out. Was absolutely astounding that the thing was not unanimous in favor of keeping everything, the zoning, the way it was. And the reason I say that is the people on the Sustainability and Planning Commission, I don't know what motivated them. They are not people who need those jobs. I really question their ethics. It's absolutely unconscionable to me that anybody on that commission could vote to allow this, whatever the amendments might be, because the arguments were plentiful, clearly articulated last night, of all the reasons that this goes against life in every way. So I guess I really just want to comment and hope that somebody who's a union worker is also listening, who thinks that jobs of any stripe are a good job as long as they pay enough. And that certainly is not the issue. A good job, by definition, and hopefully you'll get to talking about that. What is a good job? And I don't want to spend time talking about that, but I hope you will. Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. And we've got another caller. Go ahead, William. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm William Brake, retired engineer.
Oh, yes. Great. Thank you for calling. I was expecting your call. So, yeah, you were at the hearing. Maybe give your impressions of the hearing last night.
I also agree that there is a lot of very good testimony, very heartfelt ideas, and very technically sound ideas presented. And the Planning and Commission Board listened, but they chose a different path.
So what was the nature of your testimony yesterday?
Okay, my testimony was, as an engineer in January 1980, I was working a night shift as a plant operator at a natural gas plant 50 miles away from the town of Phillips, Texas, and heard and felt an explosion. I was notified an hour later that a large hydrocarbon explosion had rocked the refinery and NGL processing center, obliterated part of the industrial area, and some nearby homes. Every window in the town of Phillips, Texas, was broken. The 2,500-person town was permanently evacuate it, and $78 million in property damage. The community of Phillips, Texas exists only as a memory, although it existed for 42 years. This is the danger of propane, and this is the danger that Portland is going to experience.
Was that a propane explosion?
It was a hydrocarbon explosion, and did not say specifically what type of hydrocarbon, but 50 miles is a tremendous distance away to hear and feel an explosion.
I'll see.
But there have been propane accidents. There have been propane explosions.
Yes, you see it on rail cars, on the news. You see it other places in the industry. The word blevy, B-L-E-V-E, boiling liquid expanding vapor explosion, is what happens when a high-pressure tank gets away from itself.
Mm-hmm. So, we hear about these oil trains, exploding all over the place, but obviously the same thing could happen if there's a derailment of propane cars, I imagine. Are you aware of the specific dangers of propane tank cars and propane storage facilities?
Yes, I am. The difference between a DOT 112 rail car, which is the LPG rail cars hauling propane, and the legacy DOT 111 rail cars is only 1/8 inch of steel. Is that enough difference to prevent puncture impacts, rollover damage, and failure of the tankage? 1/8 inch is extremely small difference in steel strength.
Yeah, well, those new rail cars have been blowing up. Isn't that in West Virginia or Virginia somewhere?
Yes, that's correct. The newer ones are still not as good as they need to be.
Mm-hmm. So any other comments to our listeners while we got you on the line?
I just encourage that this action by the Planning Commission is not the end of the road. There are still many steps in the future, and Portland needs to be involved.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
That was Bill Blake, I believe.
Maybe.
I'm sorry. It's early. I talked to him yesterday at the meeting. He's a retired engineer in the gas industry, and gave a very powerful testimony. And there is quite a few excellent testimonies all for several hours, as you heard in the article I read about this thing. I think it's interesting to note that they did add, this is a issue that was emphasized in the Portland Tribune's article of yesterday, headlined, Pembina may be hit with costly obstacle. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I did notice that when they were introducing this yesterday before public testimony, that the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission has decided to add, I don't know if it's a suggestion, I don't know what power they actually have, but a carbon offset proposal, which is kind of like a tax, I guess would be an additional charge. I guess it's per gallon, I'm not sure, about a penny a gallon for the 560 million gallons that they're looking to move through here each year, said someone from the committee. So I don't know if that's something that'd be restrictive on Pembina, on their profit margin. But so it would be interesting to see how that plays out. But we have a couple more callers. And Daphne, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Paul. Boy, we have a lot of processing to do about what happened last night. I just wanted to say a couple things with regard to safety. Physicists have compared the blast from a propane train explosion to a Hiroshima-sized nuclear blast. Okay, these are not just bomb trains. These are mega bomb trains. And one of the reasons the bomb trains are exploding all over the country is because the Bakken crude is separating out, and the propane is rising to the top, and that's what's the most explosive component in all of this. So when you think about bomb trains, think about that tiny amount of propane that's causing them to explode. Now imagine mile-long trains of nothing but propane coming to our communities every day, every other day, with engineers who are sleep-deprived. I was at a whistleblower conference up in Olympia just a few days ago, train safety conference. Locomotive engineers are being fired left and right when they complain about safety issues. They are forced to work around the clock without sleep. They fear for the safety of the communities. Okay, so that's just problem number one. Now, this idea of carbon offsets is ludicrous. First of all, the Government Accountability Office calls carbon offsets totally unverifiable. And the only reason you're going to have a carbon offset is if you have an actual cap. We have no cap. We have no trading. We have, you know, the idea that we're going to somehow come up with a penny a gallon offset when the actual social cost of carbon right now is over $40 a ton, and Stanford says it's six times that. So, what we saw last night was appalling. At the last minute, out of who knows where, all of these amendments came up before the Sustainability Commission. Who drafted all of these amendments in the back room? Nobody had time to consider what these amendments might mean. We would have won the vote. It was 5-5. It would not have gone forward to the City Council without effectively a variety of amendments that amounted to bribing. And we are not going away. Resistance is going to only grow. Portland, the climate champion Portland, will not accept this. And our people will be there at the City Council week after week. We'll do what we can. We're going to stop this thing.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. And before we go to our next caller, I can see that this issue raises quite a bit of interest, so we're going to have a lot of callers, and I that's great, and I encourage that. But just to make sure we talk about what you're here to talk about as well. So you said you're going to have this movie night on April 29th. You got these discussion groups. You got the solar panels on the roof of the Musician Hall. You've been talking to unions. So talk a little bit more about that work. That seems to be, you know, kind of the nub of what you're trying to do in some ways. So like, who do you talk to? What do you talk to them about?
Well, what I didn't get to say, because we only had 2 minutes to speak yesterday, was what I wanted to do. I wanted to shake my finger at both sides. There shouldn't be two sides in that room. The side of the people that were against the Pembina project and the people that were for it. And the people that were against it really, I understand the sincerity and the importance of trying to stop that. Fossil fuels really need to be cut down. We can't be doing this anymore. But you've got to respect people's need for a job. A temporary job, you know, you may think a temporary job is just a temporary job, like a temp job. But for construction workers, that's what we do. I was a carpenter, and your life is building things. And when you build it, it's done, it's standing there, it's finished, and you're looking for another job. That's how construction workers make their living. So they're always looking for the next job, and that's one of the things they expect their unions to do, is to try to find more work. There is a lot of work going on right now. I mean, you can tell by the cranes all over town. But that, you know, they still want to get more. So that's one thing, is that respect jobs, respect the need for work, and realize that, and also fight for the positive projects that need to be done. I was at a hearing in Salem that on feed-in tariff and on solar energy, and there was hardly anybody there. The only reason there was a bunch of people there is the Ecumenical Ministries had a lobby day that day, so they brought a bunch of people there. But that's, you know, the people that were in the room yesterday should have been in that room in Salem fighting for jobs for and for more solar. And then on the other side, the building trades need to figure out what's going on here in the world, and not, you know, I mean, they, you know, it's Fox News is not their savior. You know, you're going along with the people that are union busters and your enemies for these jobs, and it just doesn't make sense. The fact is that the climate is in a bad way, and there's a hell of a lot more work to be done, blah blah blah, what I've just been saying. But they need to do their research and find out what's going on.
A lot of it seems also to be that there's just been this really drastic reduction. I mean, the working class movement, you know, a century ago or more, had at least a part of it had a stronger critique of the overall system, and a critique of the inability to actually have any say over what gets produced, how it gets produced. That whole issue seems to have, everything's been narrowed so much on all sides. You know, the environmentalists focus narrowly on the environment. The unions focus narrowly on wages and benefits. And the broader picture of, you know, what sort of, who gets to make the decisions, how the decisions are made, what gets produced, how it gets produced, it's pretty much off the table. It seems to be a major problem.
Yeah, exactly. That's really the nut of the problem. And Naomi Klein goes right to that. That we need to fix everything. You know, part of the climate, fixing the climate, is healthcare. It's education. It's caring for mentally ill, old people, blah blah blah. Everything needs to be, and democracy. You know, that we can have a hearing like that, and you know, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of democracy going on.
This is true. Well, we've got a full slate of callers here. We've got Mimi. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having the discussion today. I have to take issue with what was just said. I don't think, first of all, that people don't care, or activists don't care, or environmentalists don't care about people's jobs. What I do believe is that strong environmentalists also understand that it's not about the job, it's about what you're doing and what you're doing to the planet that we all live on. So, in other words, if you are working at a nuclear power plant, I want your job to be taken away, and I want you to have a new job, whether that is in the deconstruction of that nuclear power plant, or to move you over to wind, solar, hydro, whatever that is, whatever the alternative is in not using fossil fuels. So I oppose completely the statement that we should care first about what your job is. I don't care that you have a job in moving gas. I don't want you to have that job. So I'd rather you be not unemployed, but I'd rather you have an opening in another area of the environment to work on. Do you know what I mean? And we have people in the environmental movement who are doing just that. Look at Harvey Wasserman. Harvey Wasserman goes around the world or the United States to talk about how we can move directly into solar and get rid of nuclear power. You know, he's not just saying get rid of nuclear power. We have answers. So I think that that's a shallow approach to it, and it's kind of dismissive to a lot of environmentalists, especially in Portland. But the reason that I called before that comment was on the show was to say that it's always important to bring in the nuclear power issue into any of these talks, and to remind ourselves that while we're concerned about trains rolling through here, which we should be, whether it's coal, gas, you know, anything, we have to remember that for us in Cascadia, we have the Columbia Generating Station nuclear power plant sitting on 12 fault lines, which could only absorb a 6.9 earthquake, and we all know we're waiting for a 9. It has, it's built exactly like the Fukushima GE power plant. It was built by GE, and we don't talk about this. So yeah, I do agree that we have to communicate about the larger issues. Where can we put people into new jobs? that is healthy for the planet, healthy for humanity.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay, well, we got a couple other callers,
okay,
so appreciate
thanks.
Your calling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think what you're saying is actually at odds with what Dave was saying. I think you're, in some ways, you're just saying it somewhat differently.
No,
so.
What I'm saying is I'd like to see the people that were against the project fighting for more jobs in Salem. I mean, I think it's easier to mobilize people against a project like that than it is to, you know, to get into the nitty-gritty of fighting for, you know, for more solar or and all the other stuff. Transportation, we need to get people out of their cars and riding a bus system that gets you there quick. And it's not rocket science. They've got it in Latin America. You know, but all that kind of stuff needs to be happening. You know, I just wish people could be mobilized around those kind of projects as well.
Okay. Well, we got a couple other callers. We have Lori. Whoa, we don't want that. Let's try Bob.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
From ground zero, I heard earlier from a propane explosion. I used to have a boat in the, I watched a hole in the water where the boat was. A large cruiser just blow up. But from ground zero is something like 50 miles. Is that right, engineer? Was it 50 miles you said?
That's what he said.
The engineer is not is not with us. He was on the air earlier.
Yeah, that's the entire city of Portland. All we need is one or two of them. I mean, that station, that plant to blow up. Am I making myself clear that the entire Portland would be erased?
Well, actually, he was 50 miles away, and so he clearly is still alive. He'd felt it 50 miles away.
And heard it, yeah.
And heard it. So, yeah, I think that's not a correct statement. I'm not sure. The blast zone, they're talking about, I don't know, 3 miles, 5 miles. I'm not sure. I'm not sure anyone knows exactly. I'm not sure if there's ever been...
I'm within that zone on Hayden Island here, and I've watched boats blow up, and I tell you, it's not the way to go. It's small tanks of propane, 5 and 10 gallon tanks, and it's not the way to go. We should use Europe, Germany, Denmark, Holland as exemplaries in energy. And I worked with a wind generator company, and it was about 2 cents. 2 cents to produce, 2 cents, you know, for a wind plunge, 50 kilowatt up there in the air, 80 feet. And they put them all around Germany and Holland and Denmark. And by God, they're generating 35% of their electric power in Germany. 35%! And we are doing nothing here unless you have a solar panel on your roof. There's no a way to do this unless we all get together. And I'm surprised that the city council is bought off like that. I mean, these things are not accidents.
It was actually
they have to be bought off.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm, yeah.
Okay, it was actually the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission.
Sorry,
that's okay.
Planning, but I saw them, but I might have missed something.
Okay, well, thank you for calling.
Thank
appreciate
you,
it.
Sir.
All right. Anything to add, Dave?
No.
Fair enough.
Got another caller?
We got another caller. Edie, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to assure you that a coalition of at least 20 environmental groups went down to Salem and lobbied for jobs that are safe for workers and that are safe for the environment, our democracy, and our economy. We fought for and got them to pass the Clean Fuels for Oregon, Senate Bill 324. We went down there and fought for the 21st Century Transportation Package. We went down there and fought for the Coal to Clean Energy, Senate Bill 477 and House Bill 2729, that and that would give a lot more, and the jobs would be local, for local production, distribution, and management of energy, particularly electricity, through solar, wind, wave, geothermal, et cetera. And it would protect workers from the harms of the fossil fuel sacrifice zone. We went down there and fought for protecting rural Oregonians from pesticides, Senate Bill 613, to help workers who are getting diseases, disabilities,
So who are you referring to when you say we again?
The coalition of at least 20 environmental groups went down to Salem. We lobbied our different.
What's the name of the coalition? Is there a way? Because you know I'm pretty active on this stuff, and I didn't know about it. Let me tell you. Facebook.
The Oregon Conservation Network.
Okay.
The Oregon League of Conservation Voters, the 1,000 Friends of Oregon, Associations of Oregon Recyclers, Audubon Society of Portland, the Yarn Toxic Bicycle Transportation Alliance. Cascadia.
Okay, we don't need to know all the groups, but what the coalition? The name of the coalition again?
Oregon Conservation Network. Okay. If we Googled that, would we get it?
Yeah, 350.org. Sierra Club, Beyond.
Okay, we don't need to know all the groups. Good. I just the Oregon Conservation Network. That's good enough.
If you could go to Climate Jobs PDX on Facebook and put your information on there when you're doing that kind of stuff, that would help us.
Climate Jobs
PDX.
PDX.
Yeah, capital PDX.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to assure you that I have been an active environmentalist for over 47 years. And it has always been linking safe, healthy, reliable family wage jobs that are good for the environment and good for local democracy.
Good.
Okay. I have never, ever aligned myself with a group or personally or chanted on a protest, whatever else, anything that would be anti-workers.
Great.
Great. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for calling. And we've got one more caller. James, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I just wanted to say I don't have much to say, but I just wanted to appreciate what you said about wanting to change everything. I used to do canvassing for a small group in Portland where we were lobbying against out of Canadian interests wanting to mine the St. Helens National Park area. And I was talking to this one guy, and he said, you know, you should probably be canvassing for human rights. And I'm like, well, he's like, well, every issue is basically a human rights issue.
That's right.
That's something that really stuck with me because, you know, if people really gave a GD about one another, then, you know, we wouldn't be having these conversations about how much nuclear waste is safe to let off into the ocean, or how much explosive propane can be safely moved through our cities and towns. I mean, if you really cared about somebody, you wouldn't have the conversation. So I just want to say that I appreciate that. You're doing a great job. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. And, boy, it was a bad phone connection there.
Yes.
I'm not sure what was going on with that. So coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, Jenka Soderberg looks at the case of Tristan Anderson, who was severely disabled when he was shot by a tear gas canister at a nonviolent protest against the Israeli wall. 9:30, we hear an interview with journalist John Pilger about his recent article in Counterpunch called Why the Rise of Fascism is Again the Issue. And, of course, as always, thank every KBOO member for your support. And if you haven't yet become a member, you can always become one by going to KBOO.fm and clicking on Donate Today, or come down to the station. We are here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just on the just past the eastern end of the Burnside Bridge, just off of Burnside Avenue here in Portland. And we've got just a few minutes left to go. We don't currently have any callers. We probably have time to squeeze in another caller at 503-231-8187. We are talking about the decision by the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission, who decided to allow the zoning change to allow a pipeline to cut across a conservation zone at Port of Portland's Terminal 6 and allow the Pembina, or as they call it, Pembina Corporation, a Canadian pipeline and fossil fuels company, to allow them to go ahead and with this proposed propane terminal in North Portland. And I'm talking with Dave King with the Climate Jobs Committee, also works with Jobs with Justice, and talking about the need to get away from this jobs versus the environment loggerheads that seems to come up when there's these kind of projects. Although there wasn't a lot of union support. I know there's a bunch of guys with Pembina hats on at the back of the room there for a while, and then they left. And I know the first hearing there were a number of building trades testimony. Maybe later on there was also some testimony from them too.
It looked like the staffers of a number of building trades unions were there, and some workers were coming in when they got off work. That obviously had been working. They were dirty, and one of the staffers was passing out hats. Mm-hmm. But there weren't a lot, no. And I was surprised that there weren't more. But yeah, and you know, I kind of stimulated some environmental people to be mad at me for saying what I said, and I suppose I'm stimulating some, if any building trades people are listening, and they're going to be mad at me too. But it's great. I had no idea there was that lobby day down there. But that's the kind of thing we need to be getting hundreds of people down to, and thousands of people down to. And both sides need to be working together. That's the thing, is that they shouldn't be at loggerheads like this.
Well, the problem is that the you know, unions in general have been like the major environmental groups, in my opinion, in my analysis, have been captured generally. The big environmental groups have often been captured by Democratic Party and big foundation funders, and the unions tend to be captured by this capitalist economic system and the inability to have these broader critiques of the way that, you know, the way the decisions get made. The grassroots unionism is just not very alive.
It's coming.
You think so?
It's coming up. Yes, indeedy. The 15 now.
That's true. There's a recent article I read online about the new grassroots union movement that does seem to be cropping up. So
let me clarify a couple of things. Okay. About our committee is a member organization of Jobs with Justice. Like, you know, Jobs with Justice is a coalition of lots of unions and community groups. We're one of them. We're not part of Jobs with Justice. We're not a committee.
Right.
There is a committee of Jobs with Justice, Portland Rising, and they and Jobs with Justice as a whole have taken on $15 an hour and a union and a Bill of Rights for retail workers, a Bill of Rights like they have in San Francisco. So those are movements that involve workers and people, you know, there are people getting really excited about it. And that's how the labor movement grows, is it becomes, you know, at times there's a grassroots group of people that come up and want to do stuff, and it grows from that. Like the CIA came from that. And anyhow, go ahead.
But they seem to be kind of outside sort of the existing, you know, the major kind of union structure, which I guess maybe that's why how change often happens.
Yes and no, because like SEIU is very supportive of that. They're outside and inside, and that's what they need to be. Yeah, yeah, and it's coming. And the way labor got the way it is the McCarthy period. They kicked all the progressives out of the labor movement, and you know, that established a tradition of business, what we call business unionism. It's the narrow focus of unionism.
And that would have been a really good thing to spend some more time discussing. Because I know, you know, there's Labor Radio, which is a great show and tends to discuss things like this. But and on the Old Mole on Monday mornings at 9:10-2. And I think that's it's a crucial thing to discuss more. And sorry to that last caller. We weren't able to get you on. I wanted to kind of give Dave some last words. So again, how do people get in touch with your group, the Labor Climate Jobs Committee?
Climate Jobs PDX.
So that's Climate Jobs PDX for the...
Or you could call me at 503-286-5850.
503-286-5850.
And it looks like our... Climate Jobs PDX is Facebook.
All right. So here's Chumbawamba to take us out. It's Paul Rowan with Wednesday Talk Radio.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. Susan Griffin is an internationally celebrated writer who will speak on the false divisions our culture makes between body and soul, masculine and feminine, self and other, that allow us to hide from our own knowledge. Again, that's Susan Griffin, Sustainability in the Soul, Thursday, April 9th, 7 p.m. in the Sanctuary. 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, on Political Perspectives, Jenka Soderberg looks at the case of Tristan Anderson, who was severely disabled when he was shot by a tear gas canister at a nonviolent protest against the Israeli wall. She speaks with Tristan's partner, Gabby Silverman, for an